Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
Hello and welcome to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Seigel. This is the epilogue. I am Greta Johnson.
I'm Trisha Bobita.
And I'm Peter Seigel. I thought you were introducing yourself as the epilogue in kind of a Shakespearean
this
way.
This is the epilogue.
No, I mean, the epilogue in Shakespearean plays was sometimes a person who would come on and say, well, that happened, but in iambic pentameter.
But and now that we've seen what the Citadel Library looks like, people are like, well, is this whole story being told by Sam? Is Sam the epilogue?
Oh, are we going to end the whole thing?
Oh, you're just going to blow my mind like that?
Is this going to be again like Lord of the Rings in the last scene? Is Sam, you know, writing in his florid script in the book as an old guy and he closes it and an older gilly comes and kisses him on the cheek with their little many Samuel Juniors running around?
All right, podcast
like that they
over.
Named them all.
We did it.
I like that
That's
they
it.
Named them all Samuel, like George Foreman
exactly.
named all his kids George Foreman.
Didn't the Phrase do that too? Don't they all have
do
the
I
same
know?
Name
oh, the
of?
Phrase. Oh, yes, there's Walder, Little Walder. There are all these different Walder
right?
Phrase.
Oh,
yeah.
That's what I thought.
It's interesting that we've managed to link the Phrase with George Foreman.
Good. This is great. So this week on the podcast, we are going to look back upon season six. We'll talk a little bit about the finale specifically as well. But this is sort of, it's the epilogue. We're discussing not only what happened over the arc of season six, but also what we expect to happen in season seven, which has been confirmed to be how many episodes, Tricia?
The creators say that it will be 13 more episodes split into two seasons. So a la Breaking Bad or Mad Men, who did these mini half seasons as their final season, which means that maybe we'll wait a year and get six episodes and then hopefully not wait a full other year before we get the last six or seven.
Speaking of being whiny, I feel like whining. Come on. You have to wait a year for six episodes?
I want them to do six and a half, and I want them to leave it halfway through and then resume the second half of that episode.
Why not like in the middle of a sentence?
Yeah, you know, I want it to be an even break. Six and a half, six and
Queen
a half.
Queen Daenerys, I just found out that...
Ah, can you imagine?
Yes.
It's going to be really good, I think.
No.
So where we left off on Monday was talking about Daenerys. We ran out of time.
We were literally thrown out of the studio.
It was very upsetting.
Yes.
So I think we should go back to that scene before we talk about sort of our overarching.
So this is the scene in which Daenerys is having a conversation with her now soon-to-be former boyfriend, Dario, friend zones him.
Friend zone.
Really far away friend zone.
It's not you. It's global politics. I can't tell you how many times I heard that, particularly in my high school years. Peter, I am the president of the Glee Club, and one of the most important alliances I can make is through marriage.
It will just reflect so poorly on me if you are united.
Yeah, anyway.
I have to say my mother was really delighted with the notion of Dario being a mistress, I think for a great many reasons.
Oh, yes.
He was also delighted with the notion, but...
Oh, yeah, he was into it.
He was not allowed.
Just thinking ahead, one improvement we can make in this little podcast is involving your mother more.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
We can do that.
Nerdette recaps Game of Thrones with Mary Johnson while Peter Seigel laughs in the corner. I'd listen to that.
Yeah, we can do that.
But go
on.
So yes, that was an interesting scene in that, you know, she was very cold, very not cruel, but kind of detached. Well, I'm going to do this. You're not coming with me. Nope. Can't do it. Sorry. It's over. Yeah.
Also, that means that she doesn't really give a rip about Marine anymore because it's not like he has shown any ability to navigate politics the way Tyrion does.
That's very true.
Well, let's talk about this. Why did she do that? He guesses correctly, as we find out in the subsequent scene, that this is advice from Tyrion. If you're going to show up in the Seven Kingdoms, you're going to need alliances. You're much better off being a marriageable ruler to form alliances than you would be showing up with sort of this consort. Although, as he pointed out, even the great actual queens and kings of yesteryear were getting it on with their servants, aides-de-camp, etc. all the time. It didn't stop them from having marriages of convenience or political marriages. So I guess his point was a good one, which is, hey.
Yeah, well, and I think the other point there, too, is that, you know, as much as Daenerys kind of drives me crazy, she hasn't married anyone for strategic purposes.
She tried.
Yeah, but she hasn't actually done it.
She was gonna.
And I would like to think
that she won't. And then the Harpies killed the guy. No, she in the books actually she went ahead and did it. She actually got married.
Right, right.
But in the as we saw in the I guess it was last season, right? In mm-hmm. the great game finale, the fighting pits, she was there with her fiance who got knifed and thus ruining all plans for the wedding. So she was going to do that. So presumably she might do it again. Although,
yeah, I just don't want her to.
I don't think she wants to either. And I was thinking about Queen Elizabeth, the actual Queen Elizabeth, known as the Virgin Queen. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about Queen Elizabeth to know if she was actually a virgin. There were rumors about her and the Earl of Essex, for example. But the one thing she did do is she stayed unmarried her entire
right.
life so she could dangle marriage with the Queen of England in front of all kinds of people for political gain. Presumably Daenerys might do the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool. It is worth pointing out a line that Dario had. I pity the lords of Westeros.
Yes, as do we all. It seemed to me that the key line in the sequence was in the two scenes was when she said, actually, I just wanted to get it over with. She didn't really feel anything,
mm-hmm.
which indicates mm-hmm. to me that this is more about Daenerys. I don't know whether you want to call it growing, changing, diminishing her heart, you know, in a sort of reverse Grinch becoming three times as small. As she just, I mean, she as Tyrion says, you're in the great game now. And those who play the great game can't be distracted by cute guys.
She says that, but then she also in the same scene kind of says basically what Baby says in the best scene in Dirty Dancing when she says, I'm just scared I'll never feel the way I feel when I'm with you. She's like wondering if she's ever going to find love or be loved or love anyone. And like I think she's worried about it more in the sense that no one can marry her for love because she has dragons.
Right.
Like
right.
she can't – she's not a normal. She can't
no,
actually
she's not.
Be loved as a human because she is the mother of dragons.
We have seen her in this entire season do a lot of things, but none of them indicated any human feeling. Right. I mean, there was this entire season. There were no scenes with Dario that indicated obviously they met, but there were no scenes in which she was in the bedroom with him talking about her feelings or even expressing herself. This is something that you lose, I think, in the transition from book to TV, where in the books are all in the first persons. So whenever even when somebody is acting like a badass, you get a sense of their inner turmoil, their feelings, their needs that they're repressing. With Daenerys this whole season, I mean, we were talking earlier in an earlier episode of this very podcast, and Greta was like, well, they don't like Daenerys because she's so mean and she's so stone cold and all she wants to do is conquer. And I said, well, we've had all that in the prior seasons. This is the Daenerys we were working towards. And so maybe this is just part of the same thing, that we don't get to see that part of her that she's had to repress to go be the Dragon Queen.
Yeah, well, to me, it's not even that she's been mean. I just don't feel like she's actually accomplished that. Like, she just hasn't actually developed.
What do you mean? She has dragons. She has...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
she's conquered everybody.
Like, as a character, as, like, a personality, I just haven't seen... You know, I mean, like, you could make the same argument. Like, Sansa has done far less, right? She has accomplished not nearly as much as Daenerys. But you have seen her go through things and change as a result of them. And I just haven't seen that from Daenerys.
You see, that's the funny thing. I think I'm wondering if you and I watch the same TV series. Mm. Because, I mean, we all remember, I mean, we don't have to go over this at great length, our own complaining along with the rest of sort of the Game of Thrones of sphere. Of commentators and bloggers saying, why is Daenerys sitting around? Why doesn't she do anything? She's twiddling her little beautiful thumbs and twirling her blonde hair and not doing anything. And her dragons are in the cellar and she's marrying this guy and she's not leaving Meereen. Well, she's done all of the things we wanted her to do, just like Sansa did all the things we wanted her to do. I think the difference is that, well, what is the difference? I don't know what the difference is. I don't understand why you are satisfied with Sansa's change and see that as being justified, but not Daenerys.
I think Daenerys has done a lot. I think it's just happened slower over the course of the show, right? So everything that happened to Daenerys could have happened really over one season, especially at the pace that this finale went, right?
Right.
As opposed to, but I mean, she went from being a child, basically, a child bride who was being raped.
Totally.
To taking power over that man, to taking power over all the men in the Dothraki.
Yeah.
I mean, she's to.
We're skipping over God, the wizards or whatever they called of Karth, the people she defeated in that strange place. We're skipping over the slavers who for whom she took the Unsullied. I mean, she has conquered a lot.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's just the fact of the dragons that it just seems too convenient. Like, it just has never seemed that difficult for her, really. You know?
She's been through at least as much as Sansa and done more, so I disagree.
If listeners out there are looking at Greta or their radio or their podcast, whatever, with a tilted, confused puppy look, I am as well.
Arr, arr, arr.
Okay. What do you want from her?
All right.
There was that one moment when again, I use the term lampshading for my friend Jess, where Tyrion says in that subsequent scene, this is actually happening.
Yeah.
Or as Aaron Burr,
it's all happening.
It's all happening, Aunt Marine. Or as Aaron Burr might say, so we're doing this. There you are, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
People write in. They want the Hamilton references. And it's like, oh, my God. I mean, it's almost as if she, or rather he, was underlining what we've been talking about. Everything that all of us have been saying, come on, Daenerys, get a move on. Get some ships. Get over there. She's doing it. It's going. You know, the havoc has been cried and the dogs of war have been let slip. Yeah, never mind.
I think the other big things that happened that prove her growth are the alliances she's forming. And it's giving us a little bit of a hint into the kind of ruler she might be if she is able to get the throne.
I appreciated the alliance.
Because we have now her and three queens, more or less, of three other kingdoms, because Lady Olenna is the only noble left in Highgarden that we know of.
Yes.
Her son is dead. Her grandchildren are dead. We have the usurper of Dorne.
Yes.
On her team. And we have Yara of the Iron Islands. So now we have four queens.
Yeah, that's cool.
Sailing back to the Seven Kingdoms. And she's already told Yara that if she is just and kind and doesn't, you know, have a culture of just raping and reaving, she can control her own kingdom. So we may be headed towards an Iron Throne that rules its Seven Kingdoms a little more justly.
Well, keep in mind their opponent in what we presume is the war to come, as they often say in this show, is herself a queen who has seized absolute power.
Oh, she's not the opponent. She's not long
well,
for this world.
She's sitting on the throne they want, so they're going to have to deal with it.
We'll get there. First, let's listen to a couple of voicemails about the finale, and then we'll get into our bigger predictions.
All right.
Hi, guys, girls, whatever. Mark Paul here. Love your show. Long-time listener, first-time caller, as they say. Just have a couple of items for the Winds of Winter. Love Lady Mormont's speech. Was inspiring and all that. Terrific scene of her shaming all those graybeards, leading up to that repeated chant of King of the North. But afterwards I thought, wait, Jon Snow has got to be the worst military leader in history. After all, last week he ignored his sister's advice and then dropped his own military plans and walked, or rather run, right into Ramsay's trap. Even after Sansa warned him he'd do something like that. By all rights, he and his army should be dead. He's a great guy and everybody loves him, so maybe he should be head of HR and not, you know, leading people into battle. After all, he didn't do so well at Hardhome either now, did he? And then what's going on with Bran and Mira and Benjen? It was really cool that Benjen dropped that little tidbit that there's magic on the wall and he can't cross it, but then he just takes his horse, leaving the cripple and the girl alone in the forest. That hardly seems sporting.
I love anybody who writes out and then recites a voicemail
really
to
good.
Our show.
It's
thank
really
you, sir,
good.
For your industry. In regard to Jon's, shall we say, lack of battle acumen, I actually liked that because
me too.
As much as I enjoy seeing characters act intelligently, it's one of my great pleasures in watching all kinds of narrative art. It's one of the reasons I love Breaking Bad, because every time that Walter White faced an obstacle, he kind of outsmarted it in a really satisfying way. It's equally as satisfying just in terms of like observing human behavior to see someone make a terrible mistake mm-hmm. out of emotion. Basically, Sansa warns him, but it becomes a prediction because he does exactly, rather, Ramsay does exactly what Sansa predicted, which is to manipulate Jon through fear, through anger, into doing just what Ramsay wanted. And in the fact that Jon fell for it, falling for it implies a kind of foolishness. But we can all think, I can easily think of moments where I knew what I needed to do, what I should do, but the emotion of the moment made me do the foolish, the reckless, the wrong, or even self-destructive thing. And to see Jon do that when so much was at stake was almost moving, actually. Because in the end, he's just a guy. He's, you know, everybody calls him Lord Commander, and they want to resurrect him. He's so important. But he's just, what, is he 25 at this point? He's a young man who just saw his brother die. So what do you expect him to do?
He's now old enough to rent a car.
Is that where you went?
Yeah.
I'm doing this soliloquy about human frailty and John's youth, and you're like, oh, wow, he can
insurance
be the principal driver.
Would
that's
now
great.
Cover him.
But that's the idea. I'm backing up your point that he is just now actually becoming an adult. As we know now, his brain is just now barely fully cooked when it comes to decision making.
Yeah.
I think, too, that it makes sense to me that it's not as if the people who are falling in line behind him are the smartest military minds either.
No.
And so they are attracted to someone who seems to have loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone who just stood idly while their brother was killed is cold and harsh in a way that I wouldn't necessarily want to follow.
Loyalty and integrity, too, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he stands up for what's right.
Yeah, although sometimes quite foolishly. And as we saw when he was murdered.
Yeah, totally.
He said that. He said, I tried to do what was right and I got killed. So he sort of represents, for this viewer and for all of us, kind of a paradox that sometimes the best people do the worst things or end up losing, mm-hmm. which, if anything, is one of the lessons of this whole, you know, benighted saga.
So, Peter, you had lamented the purpose or questioned the purpose of Brienne being in River Run, and we got this voicemail in response.
Let's see.
Hey, I think the reason that Brienne was sent down to River Run is so that on her way back up north, she runs into Melisandre, who is running south. And as we all know, Brienne has a little score she'd like to settle. So that's all. Thanks.
That's a fine possibility, but it is a... So in other words, they spent Brienne's entire arc, if you want to use that word, for the season, to set up an encounter next season? I don't know.
I mean, it wasn't her entire arc this season.
It was pretty much. She saved Sansa, which was very nice of her. And then she got Sansa to Winterfell, which was... not to Winterfell, to the Wall, which was very nice of her. And then she was taken off the chessboard. And like I said, my only supposition as to why they needed to do that was to make sure that she didn't ruin the big surprise arrival of the Knights of the Vale.
I think it's because absence makes the heart grow fonder, and she needed to realize how much she loves Tormund Giantsbane.
Oh, I thought it was going to be for us to realize how much we loved her.
It would have been great if there was a shot, you know, I can't think of the movie in which you see this, although it's been dozens of them, where you have one side of the screen and it's Brienne looking up from a battlement somewhere, and there's Tormund looking up, and maybe they do a little torch song duet without being near each other.
Oh, that sounds pretty cute.
That would be sweet.
So let's think about who else is near River Run now, though, relative to the rest of the geography.
Jaime's back, because we saw him show up at the Red Keep.
Back in town,
as they say.
But Arya is at the Twins, and is she heading north or south?
We don't know where she's going.
I mean, she said she was going home, so I assume that means to Winterfell, but I guess
it's
maybe
interesting.
But Cersei's on her list.
Yeah, what does she know? I mean, in other words,
right.
I mean, there's a whole level of like intelligence that you don't know when you have ravens delivering messages over vast distances. But does Arya know that her brother, or she thinks of him as her brother, and Sansa are back in charge in Winterfell? If she doesn't know that, she'll find out soon. So who knows?
Right, but did she know that Winterfell fell?
Yeah, she doesn't know anything.
Even, you know?
Who knows what
like
she
maybe,
knows?
Yeah.
And clearly her first stop on her return tour, you know, Arya Vengeance Tour,
right.
Whatever year it is, and she went and took care of the Freys, and presumably who's next on her list would be Cersei, right?
Yeah, I think she's going to power through that list.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, one more voicemail about the finale.
Hey, this is Mike from Chicago. I just want to say first, I've been enjoying the podcast. My question for you guys is, what do you think will become of Littlefinger, Mr. Chaos is a Ladder, in the last season? He was looking pretty icy in the last scene when everyone was declaring John King of the North. How is he going to create chaos? The only thing that came to mind for me is, you know, maybe he'll let the White Walkers through the wall somehow, and that will certainly create a lot of chaos. But I'd love to hear your thoughts.
It's interesting. Like I said on the last podcast we did, we finally found out what Littlefinger wants, because so much of his power in terms of his ability to manipulate events has been the opaqueness of his motivations. Nobody quite knows what Littlefinger's after, and that gives him a lot of freedom to do what he will, because no one can anticipate it. Now we know he wants to be the king. So a lot of things could happen. You could use that against him. You could stop him. You could help him. You could give him motivation. You could offer him like, all right, you can't be king, but maybe you want to be this or something like that. So it's hard. He seems, for the first time, and this, it was interesting, he confessed two things. I want to be king. And I love you, Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
Or words to that effect.
You didn't say that.
I know he didn't say that.
I
want you by my side.
Right.
And then he tried to kiss her.
Yeah.
But insofar as he is capable of having human feeling, I think that's what we saw. And that both makes him vulnerable. I mean, in a weird way, we were talking about a new kind of Daenerys. We were talking about a new kind of Sansa or a new variety thereof. Now we have a new kind of Littlefinger.
A new kind of Littlefinger.
And all of a sudden, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how he's going to act.
Yeah.
You know,
It is an interesting conundrum, I think.
It is. And how does he think he's going to get to be king? You know, what is his plan? Now that we know that's what he wants, how does it work out in his view.
Yeah, it seems to me his plan involved Sansa. So, like, if she's not a part of it, then it's I could picture that everything is sort of like he has to go back to scratch too, though. I don't know.
In the books at this point, he has Sansa. They are traveling together. I can't quite remember. It's been a while. But, you know, there's a lot of variation. But the point is that his alliance with Sansa is extremely important to him, even if Sansa doesn't particularly care for it.
More of your voicemails and some predictions in just a minute.
You're listening to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I'm Trisha Bobita here with Greta Johnson and Peter Sagal.
Okay, so we have addressed the finale.
Yes, we have.
Let's take a listen to this voicemail that is a prediction of what is to come.
It feels obvious where the show is going now. The Tyrells and Dorne ally with Daenerys because they hate the Lannisters. Jon Snow marries Daenerys because they're both Targaryens and that's what Targaryens do. And they deal with Lannisters, and everybody fights the skeleton people. I just don't feel like there's a lot of surprises left.
So I thought that might be a nice place to start off this conversation.
So. You know, it's interesting. We've talked, even before this podcast began, but people have talked about the fact that one of the things that the TV show did to depart from the books is they really put a stop to the book's habit of metastasizing new characters.
Mm-hmm.
That has caused the path of the books and the TV show to vary more and more because at any given moment as time goes on in the TV show, at the same general plot point in the books, there's 20 new characters. For example, there was this whole subplot they did away with entirely of another Martell character trying to get to Dany and marry her. And that was a huge part of the fifth book. And it's just gone. They didn't want to have new characters. There's a character named John Connington who's like, we're never going to see. And that's fine. It's made the show manageable. It's made it comprehensible, considering how many times we had to spend 3 minutes in each scene over so many episodes for so long. It's great. But now we're kind of paying the price as we kill off, as they kill off major characters and bring plot lines to an end, satisfying or otherwise. There's not a lot left. As this caller points out, who's left to fight? What else do we have to worry about? There's been so much consolidation that it's the same thing that I said last week, which is that if they wanted to, they could wrap this up in two episodes.
Right.
They're not gonna. But I wonder what they're going to do. Are they going to start bringing in those extra characters that they haven't dealt with before?
I don't
for
know.
This purpose?
I mean, I think Euron Greyjoy is going to be more of a foe than we like. That he is a formidable gent.
Yeah,
sure. Last time we saw him, he was like, "Go cut down some trees so we can build some ships."
Yeah.
But like, he's pretty awful. Like, he killed his own brother.
He's
like,
a bad guy.
He's like the baddest of the Vikings.
And the last we saw of him, he said something to the effect of, "We're not done yet.
Yeah,
we're going to build a fleet and go after them."
I think he will prove a pretty formidable foe next season.
And again, in the books, he's doing a lot of terrible things. And so presumably he can do them next season.
You know what is interesting, and sort of to your point too, Peter, I think, is that especially in the first couple of seasons of Game of Thrones, you didn't quite know, at least you didn't know as much who was actually good and who was bad. There was a lot more kind of moral ambiguity of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting kind of looking all across the landscape now because it's pretty much good guys and bad guys.
Yeah, the formerly ambiguous have sort of fallen on one side or another. Cersei, for example.
Right.
I mean, you could dislike Cersei, but you could sympathize with her that she was trying to protect her children. She was trying to protect her legacy and her family. That's all gone. Now she's just stone evil. She just killed an awful lot of people so she could rule independently. So, yeah, she's now totally evil. Jaime, I don't know, man.
Yeah, Jaime is, I think, one of the only people who still kind of exists in that gray area.
Although Jaime has been becoming good for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way he, despite his threats, took River Run without killing anybody, his moment with Brienne was very sweet. So I anticipate one of the things happening is Jaime all of a sudden not being very supportive of what Cersei has done and is going to be doing.
I think he's going to kill her.
I think he's going to kill her,
really?
Too.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So the prophecy, Peter, the prophecy.
Oh, the prophecy.
Do you remember?
I remember mentioning the prophecy last week, which what I remember of the prophecy, which I referenced, is that all three of her children would die, which has now come true.
So the other part, do you remember the other
part?
No. The other part is the Valonqar will wrap his hands around her throat.
What is the
Valonqar? It is Valyrian for little brother, which I think Cersei has always assumed to mean Tyrion. But could very well be Jaime.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Our producer Robert said, but it says hands. And Jaime only has one hand. So I don't know, man. Like, you know, we'll see.
I
give kudos to Robert.
I do remember from the books, I don't remember if this was in the TV show, but in the books, the prophecy also included something about her being supplanted by a younger, more beautiful queen, which she assumed was Margaery, which is why she moved against her with the whole High Sparrow and all that.
I love when prophecy dictates bad decisions that just facilitate the prophecy. It just is.
Does that
just
happen a lot?
Age old story.
Does that happen a lot in your life?
It sure does. It sure does, it's, Peter.
You shall be stuck in a studio.
A man will
arguing
whine.
arguing with a whiny bald man.
Yep.
I mean, the one other area that we could go into, and the books I don't think have yet, Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, but that the show certainly could, is that we could learn much more about the White Walkers. They could be, for lack of a better term, humanized. They may have
goals.
They may have feelings.
The Night King and his lieutenants?
Right. I mean, here's what we know about them, right? They are an army that fights and kills. So is everybody else on this show.
This is true.
They don't eat the babies. They turn them into White Walkers. So when we first were like, oh, God, they're cannibals. That's terrible. It's like, no, they actually raise more White Walkers.
Like one of those well-meaning scientists in monster movies. Like, no, we can't fight them. We need to understand them. And then you're like the first person to get eaten.
The White Walkers.
Otherwise, it's 13 episodes of just fighting zombies, which sounds boring.
It does. Here's the thing. In most television shows, I'm thinking about The Sopranos. I'm thinking about Breaking Bad. I'm thinking about Boardwalk Empire and many others. One of the things that they do is in any given season, there is an enemy. You'd call him a boss in video games who you have to defeat. And then they reset with a new enemy the next season. So in The Sopranos, I can't remember what season it was, these guys are let out of jail and so they have to deal with them. Or there's in Breaking Bad, all of a sudden the neo-Nazi mob they have to deal with once they've defeated
them. On Dexter, there's a
Buffy.
New...
Right, on Dexter. Yeah, all of these. Yeah. And that's something that's very standard, and it's a way of handling the season divisions and keeping the tension over the season and then making people come back for the next season. So that's something they haven't done a lot of in Game of Thrones, at least not with that sort of coherence and clarity. But I wonder if, like, the next season they're going to introduce a whole new threat. Euron is a very good candidate or something else other than the game pieces that we now see just to create that tension. Oh, no, Daenerys was going to have a fight with Cersei, take over and sit on the Iron Throne before turning. But then all of a sudden something else happened that she has to deal with. Maybe it's Euron's fleet coming after her. Maybe it's a third force. Maybe who knows? Maybe Jon in the North will all of a sudden have to deal with the maybe Lyanna, Lady Lyanna Mormont of Bear Island is a traitor and she's, you know, who knows?
How dare you?
No.
How dare you?
I'm just doing something very unlikely. But you see what I mean, the creators of the show might have to like bring in a whole new element just to keep the tension going before we get, as you say, as we're all saying, to that inevitable conflict.
I wonder too, it seems to me like there are two options with the inevitable conflict. Either it all gets sorted out who's in charge between everybody down south and then they head north to fight the White Walkers, or everyone sort of disparately fights the White Walkers and whoever arises out of that ends up being the winner.
So I think a couple things have to happen and could help with the tension, right? So part of why it feels like things are inevitable is that it seems that there's no way to beat the dragons if you're human.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the fact that Dany has the dragons and seems to have a pretty good hold on them and can make them do what she wants now. But if the dragons have to be used to build a dragon forge so that they can make enough Valyrian steel swords to fight the war, if they're sort of grounded, as it were, then suddenly Daenerys is much more vulnerable on the Iron Throne. And so all these alliances she has, I think Yara maybe genuinely doesn't want the Iron Throne, but those Dorne ladies have no qualms about killing people to get more power.
No.
And so she's not necessarily safe when she gets there. These alliances are just about killing the Lannisters. As soon as you defeat the first enemy, then you have to decide who the next one is.
Right, right.
I was just thinking that if I were Benioff and Weiss and sitting around, I'm sure they've already done this, and written the next season and thinking, how can we introduce more tension? How can we make things more difficult for our characters? I would take away the dragons. That's like thing one I would try to figure out. How do we remove the dragons from the playing board? Because all of a sudden that makes Daenerys
a lot weaker,
a lot more beatable. She puts her in more peril, thus more interest.
But I don't think that can happen, right? Because there's the dragon prophecy.
Here's
implies
a thing
three dragons,
that
right?
I was reading. I did some wiki, you know, Wiki of Ice and Fire reading because I was trying to figure out some stuff about the Citadel. Uh-huh.
Yeah, tell us why you did that, Peter.
I did it because I was trying to find out stuff about the Citadel. And I read something that I had forgotten, which is at one point in, I think book four, one of the maesters tells Sam, we killed the dragons. Why do you think there aren't any more dragons? We killed them. We maesters. And the reason they did that is because they want there to be stability in the kingdom, and they want to be in control of basically technology. Dragons are a kind of technology. As you said, they're an air force. So it's possible that the maesters, since we now introduced the Citadel as a setting, maybe the maesters are going to step up and do something contrary to Daenerys's interests.
I would like to put money down that Sam will save the day one way or another. He's going to find something in that library that's going to change the game.
Right.
I'm excited to meet the Archmaester. I'm going to be looking carefully for casting
announcements
of who gets to be the Archmaester.
Oh, are you going
to
do it?
I mean, I would gladly be the Archmaester, but I think it's going to be one of those like Ian McShane
Help me out. Who was the actor, brilliant British actor, who played Dumbledore after Richard Harris died? Michael something. Michael, the guy from The Singing Detective. Michael Gambon. Got it.
I was going to say something similar, but I wasn't going to pronounce it right.
Michael Gambon should play the Archmaester. There you are. Done.
Michael Gambon is Archmaester. Apparently that...
do you want to start...
He's the only actor in England they haven't hired, so why not? Him and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, well.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Man, if he showed up in Game of Thrones, that would be pretty fun.
I would.
Yeah. I would like it.
Yes. was there another point about... Oh, yes. There was something we haven't actually...
There is another voicemail.
Let's listen to that voicemail.
Do you want to
listen
to it? Yeah,
please.
Hi, I'm Ethan Jones from Yorktown. A while ago, we learned that George R. R. Martin had said that the ending to Game of Thrones was just a bittersweet ending. And my theory for that is that it's not going to be one person on the Iron Throne controlling the kingdoms. I think it's just going to end up all of the seven kingdoms go back to their seven major houses, and then the Crownlands belongs back to the Targaryens when Daenerys comes back in. That's just really my theory. And then, of course, I think all of them have to team up to kill the White Walkers, because otherwise they're kind of screwed, because even with the spells, White Walkers aren't dead. They're magical beasts. Just the people that are with them are dead.
This is true.
But that's it. That's all I think of the bittersweet ending of the show.
I think the ending, by the way, is going to be just like the ending of the Phantom Tollbooth, where all the forces of knowledge gather together to fight the demons. It'll be very sweet.
That is sweet.
It is.
Okay, so we have one more prediction that we'll listen to.
Mike in San Antonio here, longtime listener, at least for as long as you've been going. And as always, congratulations for a fantastic season. Your show is an integral part of my enjoyment of Game of Thrones. But here is my theory, that the wall will come down, but it will be because of Bran. Remember, he's got that little burn thing or whatever when the Night's King touched him. The same thing that let all the White Walkers get into the tree, I predict that that same mark is what brings the wall down.
Trisha, you are looking pretty excited over there.
It's true, right? The magic of the Children of the Forest that kept the White Walkers out of the tree cave was broken when he got touched by the Night King.
Right.
That same magic, ostensibly, is what is in the wall. And so if Bran crosses through the wall to south of the wall, then so can the White Walkers.
Womp, womp.
I think that the prediction is good that the wall will come down because of a couple reasons. First of all, the producers of the show tend to like enormous physical set pieces, and that would be a nice one, as we just saw with the explosion of the Sept of Baelor. And there's also sort of a dramatic tendency that I've seen in these guys that I understand have seen, have done myself, of bringing things toward an ending by wrecking things physically. By showing that these stories are coming to an end or reaching the climax by destroying the set is something you see a lot in the theater. And I think that they want to do that, that the wall will come down, the final fight will be engaged, and whatever happens, the world will be transformed.
So the scale of the wall and the distance to Winterfell,
yes.
Would it coming down create an avalanche that wiped out, you know, how many villages, Molestown's gone, right? Is it that big or no?
It's 700 feet tall, they keep saying.
So.
And it's way far away from Winterfell.
Okay.
It's a couple days, so I don't think they have to worry about that.
Okay.
I think if you're standing right underneath it, you might be in trouble.
I think, who is it? Who's in charge now? Ed?
Dolorous Ed.
Ed.
Yeah.
Dolores
Ed might be in trouble.
So another thing we've heard a lot from people, actually kind of over this entire season in terms of hopes, things they want to see in season mm-hmm. seven, a lot of people want to see Bran warg into a dragon. That's
Ooh.
Like a very common theme, actually.
Wow. Are they shipping Bran and a dragon? Yes, I know that word, nerds. Do you know that word?
Shipping?
You didn't know that word?
Greta, you don't know shipping? This is because she's never on the Tumblr.
That's true. Nor does
Are
she
you
have teenage
tell
daughters.
Me or just make
to
fun of me?
Ship is to speculate, postulate romantic relationships between fictional characters.
Oh, fun. Is that like an acronym or something?
It's short for relationship.
Yeah.
If you're sitting around and you're fans of, say, Sherlock,
yeah.
and you decide uh-huh. to and you decide to ship Sherlock and Watson, that's an obvious one.
Yeah, that's actually really obvious.
It's kind of like positing slash fiction. Without actually sitting down and writing it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
who has time for that?
Yeah. So when you say, oh, wouldn't it be... I mean, for example, you ship Tormund Giantsbane and Brienne.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
When you speculate them, you're shipping them. That's what the kids would say.
Okay, but I don't think Bran would have to be in a romantic relationship with a dragon.
I know.
No.
I was exaggerating for comic effect, Greta. I do that sometimes.
You were misusing
yes,
the term.
I know.
Just to confuse me.
Right.
You're listening to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I'm Trisha Bobita here with Greta Johnson and Peter Sagal.
We made senior superlatives. You guys all remember these from your yearbooks, right? These are
yeah.
like, you know.
Did you guys get any?
I almost got most earth-friendly, but my best friend got
that
it.
That was a sting?
Really? They
school?
Took that away
yeah,
from
well,
you?
Well, I think it was biggest stoner.
Really?
I think it was the nice version. Then yeah, it was like a euphemism for biggest stoner.
Were you a stoner in high school?
Well, this is a conversation for a different sort of podcast.
In other words,
Peter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
That's really great.
Well, Marty is still a vegan, so I feel like she deserves it
yeah.
more than I do. What about you, Trisha? You got most ambitious.
No, but I was editing the yearbook, so
of course
I wasn't
she
allowed.
Was.
You were in charge.
You were once a maester, always a maester.
I was editing the school yearbook and newspaper and running our school's TV station, so I was not eligible to partake in such things, I don't think.
Who knew you would end up in public radio? What an amazing, strange turn your life took.
And you, Peter, did they have
most likely. Most likely to spend a lot of time obsessing over a sword and sorcery TV show.
Oh, good.
How
wow,
how prescient. How prescient were they at that time?
Oh,
all
gosh.
Right. So this is what we did. We went back and actually I found some actual senior superlatives online because I don't know what the kids are doing these
right,
days
right,
other
right.
than shipping. And so here we have, here are some nominations. Best Smile is Ramsay, or formerly Best Smile.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely to succeed is Daenerys, I think. She's got
yeah.
dragons.
Yep.
Least likely to succeed is Cersei.
Is that actually in your books? That would be sad.
No, it would be.
It?
Not anymore, certainly.
Yeah, big most likely to need an intervention would be Tyrion. I worry about him.
Do you?
Also yeah. seems like something maybe instead of printing in the yearbook, you should address quietly.
Exactly. That'd be one way of giving a hint to your friend, right? Wait a minute. What am I picture doing in here? Biggest flirt was Marjorie.
I think the male version of that could be Bronn. You know, you could get
oh,
that
yeah.
to each of
oh,
them.
Oh, yeah. I think Marjorie, I can imagine Marjorie and Bronn posing for that picture together.
Mm-hmm.
That would be really great.
Yeah.
Worst flirt, Tormund. It's not going well for him. He's trying, though.
Well, he's a very
sweet.
Big flirt, though. He's just not very skilled.
In terms of size.
Yeah. Best couple, Jaime and Cersei, of course.
Ugh. They're also kind of, well, Sam and Gilly, I guess, are the only other actual couple.
Yeah, they
really.
Seem happy. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're kind of passionless.
I mean, Bran and Meera are kind of a platonic couple, but they seem
that's
to get along
true.
Quite swimmingly.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Although I do want, yeah, I wonder how that's going to, now that she has to drag him south of the wall, I wonder
yeah,
if they're going to
survive
that.
Benjen couldn't leave him a horse.
Oh my gosh. You know, I was looking through old yearbooks and their one category is couple most likely to get married, which like,
ugh,
can you imagine the pressure?
Awful.
Like if you're a senior in high school?
I found one in an actual yearbook, best shoulder to cry on. That's
oh.
obviously Gregor Clegane. And class clown is a tie between Tyrion, Varys, Bronn, and Sam.
I don't think Varys is a good class clown.
Oh, they played him for so much comedy this season as one of the things I complained about.
Okay, what's next, Peter?
Oh, we have prettiest is all the Dothraki calls.
You know, I like where you're going with this, but I take issue with it.
Really?
Yeah.
They have such great you know, eye makeup.
Yeah, man, but Dario.
Oh, yeah, I forget. You have a thing for Dario. You have a thing for Dario.
Definitely.
I forget.
Trisha, do you have any disputes with that one?
I think that Kit Harington is actually the prettiest of all. But the man bun really took the prettiness down a notch because it was a lot about the curly hair. And then with the man bun, he's a little less pretty. And also the, you know, scars. He's a little battle-worn.
So what about most likely to age well?
Is that an actual thing?
No, I mean Melisandre, right?
Oh, clearly. Yes. Her or Lyanna Mormont. Well, she has more time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's true, Lyanna. Yeah, so she's not on this list. And I was actually talking to Trisha before about this. And I was like,
Lyanna Mormont is not in her senior yearbook because she graduated early and is already off at college. She has no time for these fools.
That's true. Damn it. Most dependable, that's another real one I found, is obviously Podrick.
Podrick.
Yeah. And the only other one I found was Teacher's Pet, which is clearly Grey Worm.
That's a really good one.
Come on.
Yeah, that is good.
Even more than Missende, I think.
Maybe the only other contender for Teacher's Pet would be Sam.
Yes.
Because he really wants to please other people and loves books.
Oh, he does.
He's a nerd. I just want to be in that library all the time.
So speaking of the library and Sam, just go Google like Sam Library Beauty and the Beast for GIFs and see what you find.
Oh, yes, I saw
really,
that one.
It's a really, really good one.
So can I ask you guys to sum up your feelings about this season?
Yeah. Yeah. Trisha, do you want to start with that?
Well, if I ask you, will you do it?
I think that this was my favorite season because of the main reason that we were excited about it from the start, which is that characters we care a lot about are finally starting to interact with each other. So there's fewer chess pieces on the board, which means that we actually get to see characters who we think have a long game, mm-hmm. ally with each other, fight with each other. And instead of having the pace of the show feel like it's an adaptation, it's starting to feel like TV.
Right.
And I think that's helping a whole lot. I think there was a lot of speed in this finale, but overall in this season, we didn't have three-episode arcs where someone was in a wheelhouse or three-episode arcs where someone's in a box or three-episode arcs where someone's just on the King's Road, which in the earlier season, sometimes that happened a lot where people were just and there was character growth and there was development and there was interesting things that happened when Brienne and Jaime go on and on and on trying to get back to King's Landing. But at the pace we're going now, I feel like that would have been a half of an episode.
Yeah, and there were episodes earlier in this TV series, third, fourth, maybe even to the fifth season, where it was, as I said earlier, 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there, 2 minutes there, because you have so many plot balls in the air, you have to keep them going.
Plot balls.
Plot balls. Would you like some hot fried plot balls? Greta, what did you think?
I think it was my favorite season also.
Of all of them?
Of all of them. I think it came together really beautifully. I liked the pacing too. I love that we're off the books, even though sometimes it does feel like things are a little cheap, especially in the humor department. I think in the end, it leaves so much more room for theorizing. And like, I think this conversation is more dynamic and fun because none of us know what's actually going to happen.
That's certainly true.
And I love that so many ladies are on top right now. I think it's really fun.
All men must die.
That's your preferred position? That the women are on top?
What did you think about the season, Peter?
I want to find out more about you. As listeners have heard, I have been disappointed in some aspects of the season. At the same time, I thought some of the things.
What do you mean, Peter?
Yeah, no, I did. I don't know if you heard me say that.
Dare we?
I was
Peter,
going so on. Many people have walked up to me who work here over the last week, and they're like, "I'm glad Peter's feeling better about the show."
People were worried.
They
it's
were
right.
worried for you.
It's just really a television show. Feelings. I have real problems. I don't confuse them. I think that there were some amazing things for all the reasons you said. There were also, I think, that the Battle of the Bastards, the last episode, was one of the great set pieces.
I don't know if
they'll ever top it. I hope they will, because it was pretty amazing just in terms of a piece of filmmaking.
One of the best battle scenes.
Ever. I kind of collect them, and I can't think of a better one. But also, as people heard, there were some, I thought, bad things in terms of the manipulation of the characters doing things because the plot required them to do that didn't make sense from their perspective but only made sense from the showrunner's perspective. And I think what you're getting here is it's like, they have like, I forget what we call it, an estuary where you mix fresh water with salt water. This season, I know it's a metaphor, go with me. This season was a mixture of television writing sensibilities and George R. R. Martin sensibilities, which are different and they have different values. And sometimes it worked out really well. For example, moving things along, getting people to do things, yes, thank you, but also falling into a kind of predictability that George R. R. Martin's glory and genius is he almost always avoids. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, why a middle-aged man, got so obsessed with these books and then this TV series. What is it about their quality? And part of it is that it completely defied all the expectations that I had ever learned over a lifetime of reading this stuff. And there were times in this season of the TV show where that happened, especially with Hodor. Yeah. But there were also times when it didn't happen and it just became another TV show. And I found myself sitting outside it going, oh, yeah, they're doing that. And that was because of the glory and the appeal of Game of Thrones for all the prior years, books, TV show, that was particularly disappointing.
But let's give the show creators credit for having an end game in mind.
Yeah.
Not that George R. R. Martin doesn't, but I mean, it's been, what, 10 years since the last book came out?
Not that long. It came out in 2012.
2012? Okay. But plenty of time for him to have...
Excuse me.
So it's been 5 years since the last book came out, and we have no sense really of if or when he plans to finish the books. Whereas the show creators, because of business constraints, let's be real, that's the only reason there's a difference. If George R. R. Martin had needed the money, he would have finished the book.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. Right? Like, he has no deadline pressure left in his life other than people yelling at him on Twitter, I suppose. Yes. So
Is he on Twitter?
He is, actually.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And every time I see him on Twitter, I think,
you
should be writing
your book.
Whenever time anybody sees him doing anything, including sleeping, people are like, you should be writing your book.
But we have a sense, and I feel confident that we'll get a sense of conclusion from the TV show. I'm not sure we'll ever get that from the books.
Yeah.
Truth. I like that they know, you know, they've agreed with George on what's going to happen, and it's going to be good, I think.
Yeah, I hope so. I just hope that it doesn't, there have been signs that it was going that way, that it devolve into just another TV show, which it hasn't been for me. Maybe to many people it is, but for me, because of the quality that I'm trying to talk about in terms of the books, it's been more and different
than
that.
It's more than just a TV show.
It's more than just a TV show.
That's really sweet.
Yeah, I know.
It's a recap podcast.
As someone who loves TV perhaps the most of all the narrative mediums, I would say that a really great TV show is better than an impenetrable, unending book series.
Bam!
And I will take your ire at Trisha Bobita on Twitter.
Oh, that was really great. That was really amazing. So this concludes our recaps for season 6. I think now is the time to remind you that Trisha and I have a podcast called Nerdette.
No, really? Tell me more.
We do. Last week we talked with Lindy West, who just wrote a book called
Shrill
West that
is
all
great.
Over the place.
I'm a big fan of her just from when she used to write for The Stranger in
Seattle. Yeah, she's really wonderful. We also this season have talked with W. Kamau Bell, who has that show on CNN called United Shades of America that's pretty cool.
Judy Blume.
And we talked to Stephen King about corgis, like
there
literally
you are.
Only about corgis.
So if someone likes you two and wishes that you were talking to someone more interesting than me.
This
is the place to go.
Yeah, they should.
I can't blame you.
Out.
Yeah.
Think about it. We're just on Nerdette.
Yeah.
Yeah, just search for Nerdette Podcast. We're also Nerdette Podcast, like on Instagram and Twitter and Goodreads and all sorts of different things. So
Goodreads?
You can keep, Goodreads. I read books.
Is it time for me to say how much fun this is? That
yes.
I like doing this more than anything else I do, which is probably alarming to the people who pay me to do that other thing. But honest, it's so much fun coming in and talking to you ladies about boobs and dragons.
We are glad to have you, Peter. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I owe you some cookies.
You do. That is, by the way, this is true. I get paid in cookies that Greta makes from her mother's recipe.
Unless I don't make cookies.
In which case, I sue your ass.
I feel like that's a good place to conclude.
This show is produced by us with help from our WBEZ cohort, especially Joe Dassault and Robert Anderson. Thanks also to our interns Maya Cole and Sebrin Mallard. Joel Meyer is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music. We'll see you whenever the show's back, y'all.
See you next year.
Next year, wow.
I know.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.